Hey everyone, it's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. I am so delighted to introduce you to our guest today. He is someone that I met through a connection on LinkedIn and got to know very well, and actually went to a meeting in the Northeast to meet him. His name is Eric Strid, and he is the founding principal and the founding leader of Consensus Wealth Advisors. And we're going to find out a lot about his history, his background, and a little bit about how he focuses in his world. So Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. So first of all, Eric, a lot of people have many choices, right, when it comes to financial planners and investment firms. And you know, I'm really curious about you. I want to know more about your story. But, you know, what makes your firm different? And why would someone want to invest with you? Because I think it's really interesting to hear each firm's what they're like and what makes them different.
Well, thank you. So, I would say there are many things that we would talk about that make us different. Probably two that really jump immediately to mind. One is we have our five core values on the wall here in our firm, and the top one is family. We are a family business. My brother and father are in the business with us. We started, our business was founded by my dad back in 1967. So we've been at it for a really long time, and we're working with families who, in many instances, we have many, you know, multiple generations of the family who are engaged with us as clients. So that's really super important to us. And I think the way that comes through in our work with our clients is we really view our clients as members of our family. We care about them. We care about their well-being, of course, their financial well-being. But their personal well-being is really much more important to me, their happiness and ability to flourish in life. We have a successful business, so you know, we make our share of money. We don't have to be salespeople or do things that are motivated only to make money. To me, the meaning of our company is in conveying a feeling of family with our clients. And the second, real briefly, is because of that long experience going all the way back to 1967, you know, we're dealing with, in a lot of instances, investments, and investments can be very volatile. Things can happen that you never believe would happen. If I remember back to 2008, when the world was on fire and things were just so crazy. And one of the things that we really lean on is our experience. We've lived through the emotional ups and downs that the financial landscape can throw at you. And we're still here to tell about it. So, our clients are able to take advantage of the fact that we've been through most of the things you're going to see in the financial world, and we've been able to navigate those.
So interesting. So that was number two, right? Can we hear the other three?
The experience. Those two of our values, our five values are contribution. Mm-hmm. Really value trying to do something that gives back in the world. Fun. It's important to us to have fun with each other, with our clients, enjoy the experience. Family, as I said, integrity. My dad is a beacon of integrity. He's always taught us that that's the single most important thing is your integrity. And then optimism. Optimism is the last, which is not an easy one, particularly, you know, in the last couple of years, it's been hard to stay optimistic for a lot of people, but we're just unshakably optimistic in the future of America, the capital markets, our clients, ourselves. We just believe in a better future.
That's amazing, really. And for anyone listening to this, I met Eric, and what you see is what you get. He's so genuine and very professional and very concerned about anyone that he works with or is associated with. And it shows through his work and in his personal life. I want to ask you, you know, going back with your family business. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have said, I lived through, you know, my business with 9/11, or I, you know, worked through that. And that was, you know, in the financial world, I'm sure you've seen a lot, right? Is there any experiences that have happened where you've said, wow, you know, we did it, we made it through, and we came through that?
9/11 is a good example. I mean, you know, there have been innumerable experiences where I actually have gotten used to that feeling in the pit of my stomach where I'm so petrified, I could hardly believe it. I haven't had it in a while, but it'll be back because this is the nature of the financial markets. But clearly, the most moment that stands out. You know, for those who remember the financial crisis of 2008, was just a terrible, terrible time, you know, for our industry and for the financial markets. And I can remember very vividly, at the time I worked for a firm called Wachovia Securities. Wachovia was a large bank, large international bank, that was kind of at the cutting edge of the financial crisis. Their balance sheet was in big trouble. And in fact, in one day, this was a giant multinational bank, and in one day, their entire balance sheet basically imploded. And I remember going home that night, and we knew this was going to happen overnight. The bank was not going to be able to remain solvent. And so, you know, the next morning, my entire universe could have been shattered. I had no idea what was going to happen. And as it turned out, for those who remember, Wells Fargo, who is a big brand name that most people know, overnight that night took over Wachovia Securities and basically saved it and bailed it out. And in so doing, bailed out my career. But I can remember that feeling that night, which was just sheer terror. But the good news is, you know, as with any experience, I'm able to look back on it and take away some incredible learning. That moment in the financial markets and in my experience, my God, what I learned about how the global financial markets work in that couple of month span of time is a whole lifetime of learning, actually. It's jammed into 2 months. It's a valuable asset that I remember what that was all about, even though it was not very pleasant going through it. But that's life, right? Like, even our most unpleasant experiences, if we look at them properly, are opportunities to learn something.
Right, absolutely. And when you were talking about that, I was just sitting here thinking two things. First of all, as a company, you know, it had to be difficult to keep your employees, right? You know, to keep them, you know, calm and focused, right? And, you know, how did you do that? You know, do you have, for any managers that are out there that might be going through things like this, you know, how do you help them keep their employees calm and focused and on target?
Yeah, it's a really great point, because that, in my opinion, that is the number one key skill of leadership, is staying calm under duress. If you look at all the great accomplishments and the great leaders throughout history, that's the primary marker that they've had, is their ability to stay calm and focused when the world around them was exploding. And I, you know, for me, I take a lot of that from, you know, from my faith. I am, you know, a religious and faithful person. I believe in, you know, a benevolent creative force and force in the universe. And I also believe in myself. I believe in, you know, what I've, the skills and talents and capabilities I've been given. And so, and I also know that, you know, like, to expect smooth sailing in your life, to expect that there won't be ups and downs, in my opinion, is foolish, especially if you want to accomplish anything. I mean, you can go through life and, you know, not have goals and not really plan to accomplish anything and have a fairly, smooth sailing through life, and you're not going to have much. But if you have big goals and you want to do something in life, you know, you're going to experience rough seas. You're going to have ups and downs. And so I always kind of had this sense that, wow, you know, this is a down and this is really hard, but guess what? This is also probably sowing the seeds for maybe one of the biggest opportunities that I may ever face, you know?
Yeah.
So that calms me, is like, if I look at this experience right, I actually am going to be able to find some sort of opportunity here that will propel me. And that helps me to stay calm and focused.
That is so key. If you talk to any leaders, and we interview many leaders in the industry, that many of them will say that the experiences that have been not pleasant experiences have actually made them better at their jobs and made them better at life. And so you also have to have that internal drive, right? Because anyone, especially if you're on an all commission job, you know, for many investment individuals, if they're on all commission, it's tough, right? So, you know, you've got to get up and you've got to pull it together, right? So it has to have the internal click. So talk to us a little bit about that, because with the pandemic, people working from home now, going forward, companies have allowed them to work even partially from home. But if you've never done that, it's a skill, right? You have to be very, very, you know, disciplined in doing that. So for those days when you're not on and you know, you're just not yourself, or maybe you just can't get going, what do you do personally to kind of get it together and, you know, and make that day great?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big, really very big to an almost crazy degree, you know, affirmation guy. Well, first of all, to me, keeping my routine on every day is critically important. I'm a huge routine guy. And part of that routine is all throughout the day, giving myself little reminders of what's important to me, what I need to do to be my best. You know, I wake up in the morning, I have my exercise, I have to work out, you know, 5:30 in the morning, I have to do it. You know, if I don't do it, the day is, you know.
Interesting. Blown. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get that sweat. I spend a little time kind of with a prayer, meditation time, quiet time before the rest of the household wakes up. And, you know, in that time, I have stuff that I've written or articles I've collected that are about, you know, being my best and how to be your best and you know, reminders of, you know, what you need to do, what you need to be thinking about, what your mindset needs to be in order to be your best today. And that can keep my day, get my day on the right foot. You know, if something goes wrong, which it will, I try to remember that. I try to remember, you know, the one big one I'm on right now is I'm into Stoicism, which is an ancient philosophy from ancient Rome. And one of the key elements of Stoicism is this idea they call it amor fati, which is to love your fate, which is to embrace everything that comes along. Even if it's something that you right now perceive as bad or a difficult experience, dive into it, you know, grab it, embrace it. You don't know, you may not be here tomorrow, you know, you don't know if
so this true.
You're having right now is, you may look back on this experience, even though right now you're perceiving it as a challenge, you may look back on it as the greatest moment of your life because it was an opportunity to learn something or to do something that you didn't know you could do. Mm-hmm. So anyway, for me, it's a, you know, it's not easy to keep a mindset like through a day when there's tons of stuff coming at you. I have to constantly remind myself. And I personally do that by having a bunch of little notes.
I was going to say, are you a list maker? Are you a list maker?
I keep a journal, and in my little journal book, I have a bunch of like little inspirational quotes and articles and readings I do of stuff along the years that have struck me. And I'm always got my nose in that book to just give myself a little quick burst of energy, an energy boost to get myself back on track and remember what's important.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. One of my favorites is what I fear I create. You know, you've got to keep yourself calm. Do you have an affirmation that you really like that you can share?
Well, the Amor Fati is one that I really love, but along the lines of what you just said, I heard recently and I've been thinking a lot about, which is, you know, the past is made up and the future is made up, you know, and that doesn't mean they're not real. It means they're made up. It means that, you know, the past is what you tell yourself it is. And the future is also what you tell yourself it is. You actually, you know, the future is a very self-created animal. You know, you actually are in charge of your own future, and you can in your own mind, you can dream it and you can make it happen, because all it is a construct of what you tell yourself it's going to be.
It's so true, because and if you write it down and you believe it and it happens, that is the most incredible feeling. I don't know about you, but it is for me. And you go, wow, you know, we did it. You know, we did it. You know, our family did it.
The whole red car theory, where if you want to, you think you're going to buy a red car and you're driving around, all you see is red cars. You don't see any of the blue cars or the mind only sees what it wants to see. It sees what it wants to focus on. And, you know, so when you write down a goal, when you specifically like, this is a specific thing I'm going to do. I heard another thing the other day. It said the brain loves numbers and events. So it's not like I'm going to be richer. next year. It's I'm going to make $1 million next year, right? So it's tell yourself something specific, write it down, and your odds of accomplishing it are so much higher because your brain begins selective thinking. It begins to filter out anything that doesn't support you making $1 million next year and embrace and seek out anything that does support you making $1 million next year. And it's all because you trained your brain to do it because you wrote it down.
It's so true. And if anyone's listening to this, I absolutely 100% agree with that statement. I've seen it happen in my own life, and I think that's great advice. I want to go a little bit about you in a minute, but I want to talk to you about your management skills because we have a lot of CEOs that listen to this podcast. And talking about focus, when you have employees who are not focused and you see it and you're, you know, it's kind of a pattern and you see it going down, but you can't, you know, you want to give them that room, you know, to kind of work through what they may be going through or something. But we've been reading the research that anxiety is very high right now. A lot of addictions are very high right now because of what we come through. But as a leader, if you have an employee that's just not pulling their weight or something's going wrong, how do you manage that person to help them get back to where they need to be or let them go or whatever you may do?
Yeah, and this is, you know, it's a difficult one for me because it's not part of my core unique ability to be a manager.
And I want to interrupt you on this because the reason I wanted to ask you specifically that question is because for anyone that doesn't know Eric, he's got such a kind heart and a kind personality that sometimes that's difficult for managers, right? So that's why I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
The reality of life is that many, you know, I consider myself an entrepreneur, right? I that's the kind of brain I have. And probably a lot of people who are successful in business are successful because they're entrepreneurs. And one of the, I think, probably most striking character traits of an entrepreneur is for salespeople, right? Like, you know, that's why you're a great entrepreneur, is because you can create a vision of something and you can sell a bunch of people on that vision. And salespeople strive to be liked, you know, and being liked is maybe not like a great managerial skill, you know? So in a lot of ways, I think that it's tough to be a good manager when you're an entrepreneur because you're willing to like let bad performance ride, you know, because you like the guy, right? You like the girl, you know, you don't want to.
And it's hard when you're a nice person to make those calls and right. It's hard. I'm that way as well. And it's really tough. Some people are cut and dry. And I find that managers who are really great people sometimes really struggle with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, one thing is being able to have, you know, as you build an organization, we've been able to start to, you know, move some of the management responsibility off of my shoulders so that I don't have to be doing this all the time.
Which is a great feeling.
but mindset wise, the one thing I have learned that I think is effective is that mindset wise, I think the mindset needs to come from a place where our management relationship is not about me squeezing everything I can out of you so that I can make more money or the business can make more money. No, in fact, what it is me understanding where you want to go. How do you want to become better? Like how, you know, I want to understand like 3 years from now, what role do you want to be playing in this business and how great can that role be? And then my job is just help you to get there. Right. And
I love that. I love that. That's such great advice.
Part of that is to let you know when you're doing things that I can perceive that are taking you off of that track. Like you told me you want to be X, Y, and Z in 2 years from now. And I'm here to help you do that, but your behaviors right now are not supportive of that. So here's how I think you need to correct that. It comes from a place where you are helping them to develop, to become what they want to be, as opposed to coming down on them, which I think is it's a negative place to come from.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that, first of all, I thank you for that. I think that's really great. So I think more people should be like that. I want to ask you a little bit about your business. The focus of your firm is around financial planning, and you work a lot with families. Tell us a little bit about your services, what you do. Do you work with businesses? Do you work with individuals, families? Give us a little taste of something that if I'm listening to this podcast and I'm looking for someone to help me with my investments, tell us what you do.
You know, I best describe our services. We're wealth planners for families. We work with families. Sometimes individuals, you know, folks who maybe aren't married or don't have a family, but for the most part, it's families. And what we do is we sit down with them, and in the same way, we talk with them about what's important to them, what their goals are for their lifestyle, their wealth, you know, what they'd like to accomplish in life that's going to require money to help them accomplish. Okay, that's where we always start is, you know, not like, well, here's a great investment strategy. No, let's talk about, you know, let's envision a great future and how your wealth needs to support that. And then we help them to plan and then execute all of the financial decisions and actions that it's going to take to help get there. So that encompasses certainly in managing their investments, helping them to design the proper savings plan, or if they are retired, the proper way to distribute their money to, you know, to get an income. It's tax planning. It's looking at their wills and their estate plan, make sure that's properly set up, their life insurance, how they've borrowed money to, you know, on their house. So it's kind of the entire suite of financial planning decisions, not just investments, but any financial decision that a family may need to make to get where they want to go.
Amazing. And it's so interesting because, again, I just want to compliment you on you and your style. One thing I did want to ask about that. So tell us if you've got an example or some advice, what are some of the mistakes that people make when they are investing? Is it pulling out of the market? Is it not investing too soon, too late? I'm sure you got thousands, but could you give us a view of just kind of, you know, what are some mistakes that they can look out for so that maybe they can dodge that car, right? And make some right decisions versus some wrong decisions.
Yeah, it's kind of a layup question because one of the things that I'm very into, I've written a book about, is behavioral finance. There's a whole field of study out there about behavioral finance and how it's such an emotional area of our lives, even though it should be much more cut and dry, you know, because it's numbers, right? It's like,
right.
People are so emotional about their money, and it, you know, emotions are not great handmaidens with smart decision making, right? You know, when we get emotional, we tend to cloud our decision making. And so I would say from an investment standpoint, we know the classic investor mistake is allowing, you know, the highs and lows of the investment markets to influence your thinking. You know, so for example, when COVID kind of first broke out, and in 1 month, in 30 days, the S&P 500 was down 32-35%. It was the quickest decline in the history of the markets. And of course, you know, people were freaking out, losing their minds. You know, we need to sell everything. The world is never going to recover from this. You know, and of course, it's because they're scared of COVID, mm-hmm. and they're scared that their investments are down, right? It's never just the fact that the investments are down. And, you know, the natural tendency everybody has is to, well, we just get me to allow me to do something that will get me to safety. And people perceive
they're panicking, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, selling my investments will get me to safety. At least I won't lose anymore, you know? And, you know, in a moment like that, it's just the worst thing you can do. I mean, look, you know, since that time, I think the S&P 500 is up like 100% since, you know, just in the short time since that happened.
And that's the best time to buy, you know, that's right there. It's just stay the course.
The thing is, if you look at, which we are, you know, very avid students of market history, that if you look at market history, every time an emotional crisis moment like that has happened, it has represented an amazing opportunity to accumulate wealth because it's the time you can buy something very cheap, you know. But yet every time it happens, no one wants to buy. They only, you know, want to sell. They only want to, you know, liquidate their investments. And so,
and that's when you have to come in and calm the waters, right?
This is why when I say we've been at this since 1967, it lends some gravitas to the advice that, hey, I've seen this movie before and I wouldn't do that. I mean, we, you know, that's a big, the weeds around consensus, we have this saying that, you know, we get paid a lot of money to say those words. I wouldn't do that if I were you, you know, because that it really is actually, you know, there's a, we talk a lot about this. There's a book that's called Winning the Loser's Game, and it's about tennis. And the book is about the idea that in professional tennis, you have to hit winners to win. Okay. Mm-hmm. In amateur tennis, you do not have to hit winners to win. You just have to get the ball back and wait for your opponent to make a mistake. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to, and investing is the same. You don't have to find some black box investment strategy that's going to earn, you know, 50% a year. You just have to not make a dumb mistake, you know? And if you exactly. just don't make bad mistakes, you will be successful with your investments, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So that was one book. Did you write a book, or did you mention that earlier that you've written a book?
I've actually written three.
Oh, tell us. We'd love to know what they are and how we can get them.
So my first book was called Empowered Wealth, and it's mm-hmm. about basically teaching your children. It was particularly for wealthier families, how to not allow your wealth to kind of spoil your families, and how to convey your values to your children, even though you may have financial success. My second book was about that topic we were just talking about, which is behavioral finance and mm-hmm. how our emotions impact our investing decisions. And then the last one I just wrote, which it was really very interesting to write, was about the post age 65 life in America mm-hmm. and how the idea of retirement is really dramatically evolving, especially as life expectancies are extending and people stand to live, you know, 30 plus years in this thing we call retirement. You know, what are you going to do? Right. We're like, how are you going to spend 30 years kind of, you know, you can't play golf every day. So anyway, my last book is about that life after 65 in America today.
Love it. Okay. Yeah, no, we'll definitely check that out. So I want to talk to you a little bit about you. So when I met Eric recently, we were talking about our younger aspirations in life and where we thought we might be going versus in our jobs today. And I was so excited when he told the story. So I'm just going to be quiet and let you tell us. So tell us what you plan to do with your life when you were younger.
Well, I always kind of had an interest in financial services because my dad was in it, right? I mean, I was always fascinated with the stock market and what he did. And I had an aptitude for it. I was an econ major in college. But then I had a little detour. I after college, I went out to Vail, Colorado, and I was a ski instructor out there. And there was about a year or so where I kind of was thinking that might be my chosen career path, just to stay out there and be a
ski. How fun would that be, right? But how many 65-year-old ski instructors do we see? There may be many. I don't know.
Yeah. So in retrospect, I'm kind of glad I can afford to go ski on a ski trip now.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I don't, but I also have health insurance.
Exactly. I love the story. I loved it. So,
needless to say, that didn't last very long.
I love, and by the way, how'd that work? I think you said, didn't you go home and you talked to your parents or something and they encouraged you to do something different?
I mean, I just graduated from college and I took a year out there as a ski instructor. My dad was still I was still on scholarship a little bit. He was defraying some of my cost of living that I didn't even know he was doing, really. And I got home and I said, yeah, I'm going to go do this another year. And he said, wow, that sounds really interesting. He said, you know, just tell me where I should start sending all these bills that I've been paying for you. And I said, wait, what? He said, no, I'm not paying your car payment anymore. I said, okay.
I love that. He sounds like an amazing dad.
Changed my view a little bit.
That's awesome. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, who inspires you?
I would say my dad is somebody who is probably my biggest role model. I've been working with him for 30 years now. And my dad's a really extraordinary person in many ways. He's an incredibly caring and kind of magnetic, charismatic personality. And I always say, you can't walk away from an interaction with my dad without actually feeling better about the world and, importantly, better about yourself. He's got a really incredible way of just making you feel, that he cares for you and that you're special.
Awesome.
I wish I were more like that. I try to be that like that, but it's inspirational to me to try to strive for that.
I love that. The other thing is, I got a couple of other questions for you real quick. We have people that will write to us and they'll, we always say, what would you like to ask our guests on our podcast? And one of the more popular ones is people who have said, can you ask them if they've ever experienced failure? And if they have, how did they get back on track and get focused out of that experience?
Yeah, I don't love the word failure because I don't think it actually exists. I mean, setbacks,
better
happen all the time and things you do that you kind of wish you hadn't done, but you never fail, right? You always have a chance to move on. You it's like moving forward. And so, I've had lots of those, lots of moments when I look back and I say, man, I shouldn't have done that. Most of them have to do in business, at least have to do with, directions I may have taken the business in, where I shouldn't have, one that really comes to mind most immediately is, there was a time when I kind of fancied that our job and our role in life was to, when you're taking care of people's money, it's a really important role. It can be a very difficult burden to bear. And there was a time in my life when I felt a responsibility to protect people from those ups and downs of the markets that I described to you, and that I needed to be the guy who could figure out, when the stock market was going to crash and be the one who, predicted that and got my clients out of the way, because I cared so much about them and I didn't want them to have to experience that. And, that mindset I've learned is it's wishful thinking. It's unicorn thinking. But there was a time when we kind of were building our firm's investment strategy around that. And, inevitably we ended up making some mistakes and probably didn't deliver the investment returns we should have to our clients. And I look back on that time and I kind of chuckle, like, what was I thinking, but at the same time, I look today and I say, well, thank God I did that because now I know better. Now I know that was, it was well-intentioned, but it was, you can't do that. I mean, it just doesn't exist. So who did I think I was?
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. You work nationwide and you meet with people. So anywhere you're located, we'll put information on how they can connect with you. Your website is what?
It's just consensuswealth.com. So okay. consensus.com.
Okay, perfect. And we'll put a link on that as well. And lastly, Eric, this is a question that I ask everyone on our podcast. And I'm so interested in knowing it, especially from somebody that went from being a Vail ski instructor, graduate of college, and then now onto owning his own firm. Tell me this, when you get in your car and it's one of those days, you're just not focused, you don't have game on, but you've got to get there. And you get in your car, what is the music or the genre or the artist or the song that you listen to that gets you going and gets you game on?
Yeah, I was actually just listening to it on the Peloton this morning. And it's a song that one of the reasons I love it is because the music is awesome, but actually the lyrics, and that's We Are the Champions.
Of course. Yeah.
And, the reason I say the lyrics, I just actually pulled up the lyrics. It's, I've paid my dues, bad mistakes. I've made a few, I've had my share of sand kicked in my face, but I've come through. We go on and on and on, and we'll keep fighting till the end, and we can be champions. Like, to me, that's like my mantra for life. Like, you can knock me down and you can kick sand in my face, and life will do that to you pretty much every day, but it can't stop me from striving to be a champion. And like, it's really the old, like, you know, you're going to get knocked down, but that doesn't matter. Did you get back up? Right. And that is like, for me, it's probably because I was an athlete growing up, like, don't expect you're not going to get knocked down. What are you, crazy? But get up and do your best again. And if you keep doing that, keep striving, you can be a champion in your own way. You may not win the Super Bowl, or like, I may never be a billionaire or whatever, but in my own, the way I define being a champion, if I just keep at it, I'm going to be. That's why, you know, I love that song, because it makes me think about that.
I love it. Well, I could talk to you all day long. I'm so inspired by you. If you have never met Eric, I really encourage you to reach out to him. Check out his story on his website. He's got it written there as well. But again, you will never find anyone more genuine that cares about you, your family, your investment, and your money. So I thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
It's my great pleasure.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Refocus the Creative Office. It's 2022, and there's not a better time to start your life out more organized and focused. Check out their products at time2refocus.com. They've got guided anxiety journals. They've got calendars, planners. They've got the best to-do list legal pads ever. They've got pill boxes, and they've even got 11 versions of password books to include large, small, left-handed, executive, camouflage, you name it. And I'm not sure about you, but I forget my passwords all the time. So it's a great way to get your life more focused and more organized. Check them out at time2refocus.com.